Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. Simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
As you know, we cover pretty much everything here at Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, and on this particular Monday, we're going to be getting to football, and it will be all football as Stan Weber will be joining us. We've got a lot to recap from the weekend and to look forward to as we all enjoyed, being entertained Americans watching football over the weekend while war breaks out in Israel, and this is one of the most avoidable and tragic stories yet of the Biden presidency. So I'll take just a moment here, and we'll be doing more on this as the week goes on. But if you haven't been following everything that's going on with Hamas, the terror group that's funded by Iran, that basically occupies the Gaza Strip in Israel, they're lobbing shells, mortars, rockets into Israel, into crowded neighborhoods where just people live, no real military installations or anything like that. This is terrorism. They're just killing people. 4,500 rockets have been launched into Israel. Benjamin Netanyahu has declared war and says it will be an all-out assault on the Gaza Strip. And this has been going on our entire lives. I don't know when there's ever going to be peace in the Middle East, but I know this. When America is not powerful, when America is not strong, when America does bad deals, people die all over the world. It really, truly matters. And in this case, there's already been an admission by the Biden administration that the $6 billion that they just gave to Iran in a prisoner swap several weeks ago has been used to help fund Hamas. And we now know that many of the weapons left behind in the botched Afghanistan withdrawal, are being used against the Israelis. You just couldn't have worse policy than the United States has had under Joe Biden. It would be absolutely impossible unless this is what they truly want. And I would ask any Jewish American to start asking that question. Is this what the Democrats want? We've seen a couple of members, the crazy lady from Minnesota, a couple of members of Congress speak out and say maybe Israel's the one that's wrong here. And so what? You're gonna be in the U.S. House of Representatives and you're going to stand with the terrorists on this? We're hearing things like that. It has crossed over into all kinds of people's lives. Detroit Lions linebacker Alex Anzalone's parents are stuck in Israel. They went on a group trip with 53 people from their church to Israel, and they're apparently trapped and stuck, and you can't get out of Israel right now. The United States is moving warships into the area, hoping to get Americans evacuated onto those ships and getting them out of Israel and out of harm's way. This is just absolutely awful and stunning, and the pictures are... It's impossible to describe what you can see out there if you're thumbing through social media, Twitter, and what Hamas are doing with the videos they're shooting of the carnage and destruction and devastation, completely unedited. They're just putting it on Twitter, trying to win a mind war, obviously. And it's just remarkable what happens when the United States is not strong. And it really feels, I'm sorry, this really feels like our eyes... Again, you know, we could talk about all the money and everything we funneled into Ukraine and ask why do we care about Ukraine? And then we sit here and see this. This is really just unbelievable what's happening in Israel. It's just so unacceptable. We are a destabilized world because the United States is weak and our policies are all over the place, inconsistent, and we simply do dumb things like give $6 billion to Iran that they're clearly going to turn around and give to terrorists. And leave weapons behind in Afghanistan because we've set a deadline for a withdrawal and have to leave on this day and just leave people and munitions behind. Billions and billions of dollars worth of rockets, mortars, ammunition, tanks that wound up in the hands of the wrong people, and this is what you get. We pray for those in Israel. We pray for the Americans in Israel that they can get out and get home safely and be with their families. We'll do more on this later in the week. Okay, as I mentioned, Stan Weber will join us in just a few minutes. A couple of thoughts I'll give here on each of these games over the weekend before we get Stan on, because a lot of times I'm interviewing Stan, and it's just Stan. I heard from some of you last year, like, hey, wait a second, what'd you think of the game? You know, Stan's great, but I do like interviewing people. I don't think Stan and I should, like, have an argument. We're not going back and forth, so we won't. And there was a lot to like about the Chiefs' performance at Minnesota. I thought the Chiefs had a real chance to lose this game, and they did. This game, statistically, these teams are... It's remarkable in the NFL. The Chiefs are 4-1 and the Vikings are 1-4. This game statistically was a push. It was a draw. Every single thing about it was dead even. They rushed within 3 yards of each other. They passed within 10 yards of each other. The time of possession was within a minute or two. Every single thing in this game was identical except the first play of the game, which was a turnover by the Vikings and would prove to be the only turnover this game and led to the Chiefs taking the lead. And they took the lead off that turnover by the actual margin of victory. One turnover to zero. The key number in this game was, look, the Chiefs just looked a lot better than they did against the Jets. 31 out of 41 for Mahomes, 281 yards and two touchdowns. He had a 109.9 quarterback rating. There were no turnovers. The sloppiness we saw against the Jets, the turnovers, the underthrows, the silly, stupid things that the Chiefs were doing were gone in this game. And it made all the difference in the world because if the Chiefs had played sloppy play in this game, I don't think they would have won this game. It was a very scary moment with Travis Kelce. The way he slammed his helmet, we thought maybe he broke his ankle or something that wouldn't be repaired. It will probably be more difficult to play on Thursday night than it was finishing out yesterday. If this is the ankle, if that's indeed what it all is, these are the kinds of things that just get worse as they go. The next few days, they just tighten up and swell, and there's nothing you can do, and they become immobile. So I think Thursday night's going to be more difficult for him than actually finishing the game yesterday was. Kelce's a stud. He rallied up. He made play after play. 10 catches, 67 yards, and a touchdown. Drew Tranquil on the defensive side had 9 more tackles. I love this guy. He's the most unheralded player on the team. We saw some exceptional cornerback play from the Chiefs yesterday. McDuffie with a couple of nice breakups. Obviously, Snead in great position on the play at the end of the game where they called pass interference and waved it off. It was absolutely remarkable that he was not flagged for taking his helmet off. But remember, it still would have been the Chiefs' ball as they waved off the pass interference. The Chiefs would have gotten the ball half the distance to the goal line. So, in essence, they still would have retained the football. It wouldn't have changed possession right there. But I don't know what L'Jarius Sneed was thinking, taking his helmet off. And I don't know what the officials were doing, saying, hey, put your helmet back on so we don't have to flag you. That is a tried and true, hard and fast rule in the NFL. You do not take your helmet off. You certainly don't take your helmet off to argue with officials. I cannot believe that he wasn't flagged there. And complaints as such are valid. And some people are saying, is there any other team in the league that gets away with this? Listen, we've sat here our whole lives and watched the Chiefs, the Royals, bad teams, things happen, whatever. If the Chiefs indeed are the team that's going to get calls, they've earned them. They've earned them. Now, anybody that thinks that was pass interference on that play doesn't understand pass interference. And if we can't recognize that human officials will make mistakes and get caught up in the moment and simply throw a flag because they saw a couple of players close to each other and think it's pass interference without realizing the ball was nowhere near anywhere it was going to be caught by either one of them because the quarterback had been hit as he threw the ball. Again, it was not deflected. It was not deflected. But Kirk Cousins was hit on that play. And I'm sorry, that just makes a difference. That ball was just a flutter ball. It wasn't close. That's not pass interference. And we all know that's not pass interference. They did the right thing. An official got caught up in the moment, threw the flag, they huddled up, they pulled the flag back, great. They did blow it with Snead. They should have given him a 15-yard penalty for taking his helmet off, but this was so much better for the Chiefs than the game against the Jets. That's really the takeaway is, especially with the young receivers, the takeaway here is the Chiefs just are, it's so weird to be Super Bowl champs and have to be the team that just gets better week after week after week. They're going to have to do that. They're not as good as the San Francisco 49ers right now. That's pretty obvious. They're probably not as good as the Eagles. They weren't as good as the Lions. They're not as good as the Dolphins, probably, right now. But they're going to play them in a couple of weeks, and the Chiefs can get better. And they are. Patrick Mahomes becomes the first quarterback in NFL history under the age of 30 to defeat all 31 other teams. Wow. Only 10 players have done that in history, 10 quarterbacks in history beat the other 31 teams. And Mahomes becomes the very first one under the age of 30. The Dolphins looked good again. They go to 4-1. The Chiefs are 4-1 atop the West. The Chargers are 2-2. The Dolphins are the only other 4-1 team in the AFC. So the Chiefs are tied for the one seed right now. And obviously the tiebreaker's coming up November 5th in Germany when the Chiefs play the Dolphins in what should be a wild game. The Eagles and the 49ers are 5-0. Nobody looks as good as the 49ers. Their point differential, I think, is almost 100. In 5 games, they're averaging Their average margin of victory is like 19 a game. They're just killing teams. The 49ers look ridiculous. Brock Purdy looks like the MVP of the league playing quarterback for the 49ers, and the Eagles remain undefeated. So there's a lot of good teams out there, and we'll get a little bit more from this with Stan. We're kind of getting to the point of the season now where we start looking around at, okay, who are the really good teams? We thought maybe it was Buffalo after a couple of really nice wins. Buffalo just flat laid an egg on Sunday morning. I mean, they looked terrible against Jacksonville. Cincinnati got a win. They looked better. Joe Burrow had a good game. He's been hurt. Maybe that's all been a function of his injury. Maybe the Bengals really are good, but they haven't shown it to this point. So a lot to talk about with Stan as the Chiefs move to 4-1 with their 27-20 win over the Minnesota Vikings. And folks, this is a good win. I don't care that the Vikings are 1-4. That's the best 1-4 team I've ever seen. They got weapons everywhere. They got a quarterback that can sling it. They make mistakes. They, in their four games they've lost the turnover battle in each one. And there were little things that you can see in addition to just the one turnover. There were little things, just a little off on this pass or the one little dropped screen pass that would have maybe gone for a touchdown. There were little things that the Vikings haven't cleaned up that the Chiefs have, but that's how close the margin is in this league. The Chiefs, with the little things, have largely been better than their opponents this year, and they're 4-1. The Vikings have not, and they're 1-4. But these teams, again, statistically, that game was a dead heat, dead even, and it's remarkable the fine line between winning and losing in the NFL. We often talk about making plays and when to make plays. You have to make plays late in games. And the Missouri Tigers were cruising on Saturday. It was one of the greatest moments ever at the Zoo. The fans are into it. LSU looks disheveled. They're scoring some points, but Missouri basically had control of the game most of the day. You felt like Missouri was the better team. And then the fourth quarter, LSU wins it 22-7 in the fourth quarter. And I don't know if Missouri got worn down, if it was focus. I can't really say, but it certainly wasn't like the first three quarters. Missouri loses 49-39 in a good old-fashioned shootout. Unbelievably, Brady Cook throws for 411 yards and two TDs in this game. Luther Burden had 149 receiving, and Missouri loses it. It was two interceptions by Brady Cook that cost it. Obviously, you didn't expect him to go win the game with so little time left on the clock, but the last pick six made the score different than what it actually was. It was a 42-39 game, and it was wild. But Missouri gets outscored 22-7 in the fourth quarter, and the bottom line in football, when you're at the level where Mizzou is right now, and Mizzou's a way above average, very good football team that obviously has some problems. Their defense isn't as good as we thought it would be, but they're just doing some things that we didn't think they'd be as good at. They're a very good football team. They're capable of winning 8-9 games if they go roll this thing out. But you have to finish. You got to finish the game. And in this particular game, it just kind of unraveled at the end. You have to make plays on both sides of the ball. It can't just be one. Yeah, I mentioned, when talking about the Chiefs, I mentioned Drew Tranquil because I felt like his 9 tackles, again, they're meaningful tackles. Many of his set up 3rd and 6, you know, where the Chiefs have the opportunity to get off the field. You have to have some guys step up on defense in a game like this and slow LSU down. Just get that one stop in this game for the opportunity to go win it, and you can't have the 2 turnovers. So Missouri just comes up short. I don't have a lot of complaints here about Missouri. They're better than we thought. They're wildly entertaining. They're having a fine season. They lost to LSU. That doesn't sound like the end of the world to me. The overreaction of Missouri fans has been, well, it's typical Missouri, as if you're supposed to win them all and win the national title. This just in, Missouri's not winning the national title this year. They're not making the playoffs. They're probably not winning their division. I doubt very strongly they'll win their division. But they're good, and they're fun. And they got a chance to, you know, every week they play, they have a chance to beat somebody good. It's a gauntlet in their division right now. And Georgia showed that over the weekend. They just destroyed Kentucky, who'd been playing very, very well. So it's going to be really hard. I'm sorry, KU, K-State, Missouri fans, I went through this last year with K-State fans that were doing the what if. Well, what if we hadn't lost that game and, you know, we could have been in the playoff? Or yeah, in the end, you were good enough to beat TCU, who wound up in the national title game, but you didn't win all those games all season long. And you're not national championship caliber. And that was proven out. You went and played Alabama in a bowl game and got pounded. Neither of these three, none of these three programs are that caliber, but they are just below that. They're capable of doing some really fun things. KU looked fantastic on Saturday. I mean, they're literally in the running still to get into the Big 12 championship game. Is Kansas State? I mean, I don't know. That was a debacle that they had on Friday night against Oklahoma State. They have no playmaker on offense. So they lost their two playmakers to the NFL, and they haven't replaced them. There's nobody there doing what needs to be done. The kid on the roster is number five. He's a true freshman. He's the backup quarterback, but he's the best athlete on the team. He should be playing in the slot or as receiver. They should be doing end-arounds with him. If he doesn't take over as quarterback right now, fine. Get him on the field and get the ball in his hands. There are no playmakers there. Will Howard had three interceptions. Dudes aren't open. All right, he's forcing everything. He's a better quarterback than this. We know he's a better quarterback than this because he was way better last year when he had Deuce Vaughn and a wide receiver, Malik Knowles. So when he had two players that are now off in the NFL, Will Howard was really, really good. But he doesn't have anybody to throw to right now. The running back's a nice player, but he's not a game breaker. He doesn't break big plays. He's just a chain mover. Kansas, on the other hand, boy, this was a really good game plan. How do you score 51 points when your quarterback's 8 out of 12 for 91 yards? Well, they did it. They did it by rushing for 399. UCF's defense is not Big 12 worthy, man. You just line up against UCF and run the ball, and Kansas won easy 51-22. So a lot to discuss here with our man Stan Weber. It is all brought to you by Back 9 Development. Online at back9development.com. Back 9 Development is your custom builder in Kansas City, Lawrence, Topeka, Manhattan. If you'd like to schedule a consultation with TJ Vilkanskas, just give him a call, man. This is old-fashioned. Say, TJ, what's up? Let's chat this over. 785-236-0161. Online at back9development.com. The Finch Pocket Knife Company is online at finchknifeco.com. You can shop at Shields, The Bullet Hole, or Teague Tractor and find Finch Pocket Knives. Or you can order online and get the best available price on all of their series, including the new Stinger series, Finch Pocket Knives. Keep life from getting dull with a Finch Pocket Knife this holiday season. What a great gift. FinchKnifeCo.com. And my buddy Ron Buck over at Buck Roofing and now Buck Disposal. If you have job sites where you do moving, cleaning, remodel, and you load up one of these big dumpsters with all kinds of stuff that has to be hauled off, you've been dealing with big corporations, and they're not very reliable with the dumpsters. And so Ron Buck's doing his own dumpsters. Went out and bought 100 of these things, and he's ready to work with you wherever your job site is. Log on to buckdisposal.com. They promise their customer service is better than anybody you've dealt with in this industry. Whether you're moving, cleaning, remodeling, building, whatever it may be, you need a dumpster on your site. Ron Buck and his team will bring it to you when you want it, and they'll take it away when you want it. Call 913-242-7695, buckdisposal.com. Stan Weber's here with our football feast. It's going to be great. Oh, I don't think he's going to be very happy about his Dallas Cowboys. Or the Wildcats. But we'll start with Chiefs and Stan Weber right now on KKHI. Hit it.
The KK Has Issues conversation is presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. Shop, click, drive at robertsrobinson.com.
Well, we got a mixed bag this week with Stan Weber. Some teams won, some teams lost. We got some good, some bad, but never ugly as Stan is with us. Hello, Stan. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Kevin. Good to talk to you.
It's always great to have you on. And, you know, it was a mixed bag, but I think the highlight of the weekend for me anyway was watching the Chiefs play an efficient, clean football game. I never thought the Vikings were some sort of slouch or pushover. This is a pretty good win. I mean, the Vikings have to be the best 1-4 team in the NFL, but the Chiefs played a much cleaner game. Was that your takeaway from this, or was it something else?
No, clean and relying on different parts of the team to be key factors in winning the game. You still have to start with Andy Reid's play calling and his coaching and everything that he stabilizes the team with. Amazing Steve Spagnuolo's defense. Is that incredible to watch, Kevin? I mean, it's as exciting sometimes as the offense. Like, how did they sack the quarterback in 1 second? How did that happen in the NFL? You know, the coaching's unbelievable. And Patrick Mahomes, some of his plays were off the charts. So we got to start there. But after that, you look around and you say, now you can rely on Pacheco running the football. They are absolutely running the ball with predictability now. not to the levels of the old days. This isn't Marty Schottenheimer football, but it's now a part of the offense, some balance in the offense. That's one way to skin the cat. And then defensively, it's just solid defense at all levels. From the front line, fine. You know, not superstar edge rushers, but with Chris Jones blowing things up and the guys hustling and fighting in the depth and defensive line, linebackers were a real strength, still are with the offseason signing of Tranquil. Bolton will be back. Secondary is just incredible, the man-to-man defense they play. So you got just such solid defensive play, much better running. So when we talk about the Chiefs over the last couple of years, Kevin, we haven't been able to talk about that. Reliable defense down after down and a running game that you can lean on as well. Is a new aspect to find a way to just clean up a game and play solidly. Minnesota was desperate. They were playing with purpose. When NFL teams do that, Kevin, they usually put out a great performance. That fumble on the first play by Minnesota really set the tone for the whole day. Not that they are going to be a fumbling or turnover machine, but it gave the Chiefs almost as if they got to receive at the beginning of the game and at the second half, right? So they always were in control, had the lead. It was very comfortable. It was an NFL game. You expected to be close, but I thought Minnesota did a great job of bringing it, playing with purpose, and doing everything they possibly could, and the Chiefs were better. How about that? That's a pretty good statement.
The numbers were identical. I mean, the statistically, this game was, they were carbon copies of each other. The only difference was the one turnover, and that was on the first play of the game, and it seemed to be the Chiefs' edge all day was they scored off of that and had that in their back pocket the entire game, which does put you in a comfortable situation. Stan, I want to focus in on the defense a little bit here because I am just amazed that depending on the play that you watch, it's a different player every time. They don't need Chris Jones to make the play every time. There's other guys. This Drew Tranquil is, you know, I want to call him a glue guy, but I don't think he is a glue guy. I think he's just a real player. I mean, he keeps leading the team in tackles every single week, and they always seem to be big tackles. They always seem to be like, you know, it's second and 10 and he blows some guy up for a 3 yard gain. And now they're third and 7, which is an uncomfortable spot. It's not the sexy. He's not the sexiest player I've ever seen, but he's terrific. And every player in the secondary is stepping up at times, making plays. I cannot believe the number of players on that defense that can make a play.
That's right. And that's why I said on all levels. And Nick Bolton is a super run stopping linebacker that you don't see in the NFL very much, and a leader. And so they've got a good linebacker depth, really high-level linebacker play. We've talked about this, Kevin, during this year. That's the best we've seen in the Patrick Mahomes era. But in the secondary, I just think that you got to look back there and say, L'Jarius Sneed's a superstar in my mind, Kevin. I don't know if he gets a publicity to be that, but in my mind, he is a superstar. Trent McDuffie is on pace to follow him as a superstar player. And they aren't the only guys making plays, but I think it's not just Chris Jones, okay? L'Jarius Sneed is unbelievable. He's like the Travis Kelce is to Patrick Mahomes, right? And then the guy who's coming up, how about those blitzes by Trent McDuffie?
Yeah.
I tell you, he can play close to the line, Kevin. He can guard guys in the slot, which is another skill. And he also can be on the outside and play man-to-man defense. These two guys are unbelievable. And one of them is just, you know, in the learning stage. Trent McDuffie still has plenty more to do, but you see him getting more and more comfortable. So those guys aren't just decent players. Those are superstar type players. And then you're only as good as your weakest link. And you look around, you go, wow, I don't feel like there's weak links in the defensive side. And that's pretty cool as well, because other guys can step up. Brian Cook makes some plays here or there. Justin Reed has grown up. I mean, he just quietly was a free agent last year, came to the Chiefs. He even said at the end of last year, you know, I was still getting comfortable with what Steve Spagnuolo wants. This year, he's playing completely comfortable. He may not make a giant play here or there, but when he has to make it, he makes it. The defense is just rock solid now, Kevin. You watch as much NFL as I do, and you look at what's going on. Yeah, I don't see many defenses playing at a higher level. There are some. There definitely are some, like San Francisco 49ers are killing it out there, and they got Bosa off the edge. You know, the Chiefs aren't at that level, but the Chiefs are right there in the upper 10 teams in defense down after down. And like you said, it's different guys because you're only as good as your weakest link, and there's not much of a weak link on the defensive side right now, especially with Steve Spagnuolo calling a play. So I do not want to downgrade. He's like Andy Reid is to the offense, Kevin. I mean, they call the right thing. Minnesota was good. You know what blew him up? Wasn't necessarily great play by the Chiefs players. It was great calls by the defensive coordinator that put Minnesota in a bind.
Well, here's another thing that I see, and I watched this for years with Bill Belichick, because Bill Belichick in New England changed as the years went on. He became more of an offensive-minded coach, scoring more points. He's still a defensive mastermind, whatever. But we saw him coach games differently after he won Super Bowls. And I mentioned to a buddy yesterday, two or three times, he kept saying, are they really going for this? Oh my gosh, are they blitzing again? And I just kept saying, when you've won two Super Bowls, you throw the rules out. They don't apply to you anymore. You get to do things when you've won two Super Bowls that other coaches don't do. So yes, Spagnuolo takes all these chances and does a lot of blitzing and all this. He gets to do more and more of that because they've won two Super Bowls. I mean, it is absolutely the time that you just pin your ears back and say, let's go win this game. Let's not play by the old rules of football. It's fun to watch when you don't have to follow everybody else's rules.
Yeah, it's a little bit like when, Kevin, you've seen your kids grow up, and I know you're hoping to see some grandkids grow up. I'll tell you, it's really cool, not to rub it in, but watching my grandkids grow up, that, you know, the oldest kid is there to kind of make sure that the next oldest doesn't mess up, or if they do, they'll clean up the work. That's kind of what Steve Spagnuolo and the defense is like for the Chiefs. They're like the second child who can have a little more fun, have some flair, doesn't worry about the risks that are out there because the older sibling is always worried about those things and held responsible by the parents or grandparents. And so, you know, you just get a whole different style. When you got Patrick Mahomes on the other side, Kevin, and you have two Super Bowl rings, like you mentioned, Steve Spagnuolo is like that second kid. You're like, why can't I do this? You know, watch this. And there's some flair about them, and they just have a free mind, right? I've seen it. The second kids have just a much more of a free mind than the first, who are worried about all the consequences. Well, you don't have to worry about those consequences because, A, you'd have two Super Bowls. But also, the Chiefs have been such an offensive team that he can kind of quietly build this defense. And what's great about Steve Spagnuolo is his core defense for the Chiefs isn't lining up in a 4-3 defense and playing sound cover two down after down. That's not even in their DNA, Kevin. That's not base defense. The base defense is to blitz. This is not crazy when you do it every day in the offseason, every meeting, and every practice. They're coming, baby. And I remember hearing from a few players in some special situations in life where they go, even Travis Kelce says, you know, I can't wait to hear what Andy Reid drew up this week. You know, they sit down and they go, what's he going to give us this week? And it's not just the trick plays. It's like, how are we going to cut that team apart? I'm telling you, the defensive players have the capability, the confidence right now that they can't wait to see how Steve Spagnuolo is going to use them. Like, who's going to blitz this time? How about Tranquil guarding a guy, you know, 40 yards downfield? What the heck's a linebacker doing guarding a guy down there when Trent McDuffie's hitting the quarterback? They're interchangeable. They're excited. And, you know, we got to mention this. Travis Kelce, you know, makes it through, fortunately. But Taylor Swift, you know, is his team distracted? You know, the thing that I said, Kevin, about that was that distraction is all about Travis Kelce and those type of things, maybe Patrick Mahomes. That defense is over there sitting on their corner of the locker room with having complete concentration and loving the fact that no one's even watching how good they're getting.
Yeah.
But I think that Steve Spagnuolo's base defense is to bring it, Kevin. Is core. They can do this game after game after game, and you're seeing some players really grow up and become great players.
Okay, on the offensive side of the ball, we heard Romo mentioned this a couple times yesterday. The Chiefs are not bashful or shy about this at all. They think Rashee Rice is going to be a terrific wide receiver. And he made a big catch yesterday, and he looks like he's got some skill. And this Ross kid is the big target the Chiefs have been missing. He's 6'4". He can go up and get it. He's been injury prone. And I don't know that it matters how good they are the first week of October, but it matters how good they are in mid-January when the playoffs start. What do you see as the upside for these two receivers in particular? Because I don't like the Chiefs just going forward with a collection of just guys. I do think at some point somebody needs to step up on this team. Travis Kelce's getting older. He got hurt in this game. I think he's going to be injured the next 3 years of his career. I just don't think he's going to be like the stud workhorse that he's always been. I just think when you get up in age, those things happen. The Chiefs have got to find another main target. Do you think that's Rice? Do you think that's Ross? What do you see in those two players specifically? And can one of those elevate and become the top target, not named Travis Kelce?
They come at it from two different angles and could get to the same point. I think Rashee Rice is the most likely to be a sound feature type of wide receiver. His body type is the type that works in the NFL. He's got quick twitch ability that once he starts moving, his first two steps are really elite fast, and he has a big enough body to take hits when he doesn't see guys. You catch the ball over the middle, that they are flying around hitting you from all different angles so quickly. He seems very comfortable. All he has to do, Kevin, to be really good is just cut out those drops. And that's something that I think, hey, Tony Gonzalez, remember he used to be thought of as a pretty good tight end, Kevin, until Travis Kelce came along. Tony Gonzalez had problems dropping the football early in his career. And we could talk about a number of people. How about Jerry Rice? Jerry Rice, the greatest wide receiver ever. They wondered, does he drop too many footballs when he started out with the San Francisco 49ers? Rasheed Rice just needs to drop. Get rid of those drops. It should happen. I don't know if it happens 3 games from now, next week. But sooner or later, he's not going to drop third down passes and force the Chiefs to punt. That's bad because the Chiefs don't even have third down very often. So if they can execute well on third down, they're probably going to go down and score a touchdown. But I think Rasheed Rice is very reliable. I'm not a big guy that, you know, studies before the draft and tells you the 10 players that the Chiefs need to draft, Kevin. I don't waste my time doing that. But when something pops, when I see the tape and I feel conviction, like that looks reliable, it usually I usually feel comfortable going with it. And that's what I felt like when I saw the tape after he was drafted and the work he did at SMU. I go, that's an NFL receiver right there. So I think that they should be high on him. I think he's going to pan out and get it done. Now, Justin Ross, he's at the other end of the spectrum. You got to start with the potential. He went to Clemson. Okay, that's when Clemson was Alabama and Clemson winning the national championship. So you look at potential. You look at the body type. Long. You can throw the ball up and get him. Athletic enough. You know, he's not going to be able to bend his knees and move as quickly in the interior of the defense, but who cares? He can run the routes on the outside. He can be a big factor in the goal line. Will he stick? Will he take? That's a big question mark. I think Rice absolutely will. He'll be a receiver for the Chiefs 2 years from now, getting it done in a big way. Justin Ross is more like bonus coverage. And maybe it's hit his capabilities at the right time. That's not what you count on throughout the regular season. But what did the Chiefs catch a break with last year, Kevin? Kadarius Toney, who's unreliable, the Giants gave up on him, said, you know, you're just get moving on down. He was not a factor really for the Chiefs in the regular season, but what did he do in the Super Bowl? You know, what kind of plays did he make? The Chiefs caught the best of what Kadarius Toney brings, and that he's a very inconsistent player. And I think Justin Ross is probably in that same category. So if he has a good playoff run or right at the end of the season plays high level and helps this 2023 team win a Super Bowl, it'll be very effective. But I think it's a bigger question mark in my mind to say, is he going to be a receiver 2 years from now? He's got to do a lot more. We're really just getting introduced to him in regular downs because the group is just different but ordinary. Okay, is that a good description of the wide receivers?
Yes.
They are different. They have different ways of using these guys. You know, Justin Watson's the most reliable guy, but do you count on him 2 years from now being a giant factor for the Chiefs? No. No one counts on him even next Sunday or Thursday, right? But who made the big catch down the middle, guarded? He looked like Tyreek Hill on that 30-yard pass and Patrick Mahomes' blitz and threw it up for grabs or threw it perfectly. I don't know how to look at that, but that, you know, Watson went up and grabbed the football. They got guys who can do different things, but they don't have reliable people that scare the opponent. And I think Rasheed Rice will be that guy 2 years from now. And then the question is Justin Ross going to be able to stay healthy and be consistent? I'm not going to say he's not, Kevin, but it's only a work in progress for him right now.
I need one of them to step up and be good by January. I can't wait 2 years on either one of them. We need to see one of them really, really burst on this, I think, really burst on the scene. Okay, I want to ask you about some other things around the league here, but one final question on the Chiefs, and we don't have to take any time on this. You can simply say yes or no if you like. The Chiefs get the Broncos and Chargers at home and then the Broncos again before they play Miami. Should we be disappointed if the Chiefs are not 7-1 when they play the Dolphins?
Yes, you should, because the one team you need to clear is the Chargers. Okay, Denver and the Raiders are not going to be a factor in the division. So the games that matter are those head-to-head battles. And they don't even matter for just this regular season or this three-game stretch, Kevin. It matters over time. Don't you think that Justin Herbert, do you see that commercial where he does it with Patrick Mahomes? I don't know if I read too much in it, but don't you just feel a comfort level that Herbert knows that he's not as good as Mahomes?
Well, they have to say Herbert's name in the commercial, and they don't say Mahomes's.
Yeah. You know, Justin Herbert is dangerous. He is athletic. The Chargers can beat the Chiefs on any given game, right?
I know, but it's a home game.
Over time, you know, there should be hatred. Not literally. There should be a rivalry like, we are as good as you and we don't want to lose to you. That's not the feeling between the Chiefs and the Chargers. Even the Chargers know we'll upset you once in a while. So you can't let them come in here and beat you in Arrowhead, right? And for the division and everything else. So, yeah, you need to go 3-0. You're playing Denver. The schedule's laying out very, very well for the Chiefs. Played 4 out of 5 games on the road, and they ended up being a lot easier than you thought. The Jets without, superstar quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. So this is working out well. Yeah, it's not too much to expect.
7-1.
And right now, Kevin, when you watch around, you're competing for the NFL championship.
That's right.
Super Bowl, right?
That's right.
So we watch everybody. You know, this league right now, this year, they are not elite football teams. The level you've got to reach to be the Super Bowl champion is not traditionally high, if that makes sense. New England and Pittsburgh were coached at a high level and playing at a high level, you always had to reach a high hurdle. You know what I'm saying?
You're talking AFC.
But you don't have that right now.
You're talking AFC, and my first question to you about another team is going to be about San Francisco, because I think winning matters, okay? And stats, whatever. I know there's another quarterback that will come to mind that's having statistically a better year, whatever. I'll just ask you this question. He is 10-0 as a starter. Is Brock Purdy the best quarterback in the NFL?
There is no way I could say yes, but man.
Are you watching
him? Just look at the results.
Are you watching him? It's perfect. It is flawless football. It is flawless what he's doing.
And it looks too easy. I mean, the ball is so catchable.
Oh.
So catchable. It's floating through the air.
Yes.
You know, when you see Josh Allen throw a ball or Herbert, you can hardly see it go across your screen. I mean, it's in stride.
It's right in their hands. He just lays it in there.
It used to be like a bullet.
He just lays
it in there like it's a 7-on-7 half workout, you know, half speed workout.
I know Tua's got big stats and the Dolphins have gone crazy, but they lost a game, okay? And Tua wasn't very good in that game. He made some mistakes in that game. Brock Purdy is the MVP of this league right now.
It's unbelievable. The best example of that is they have second and long or something like that against Dallas, and he completes a pass perfectly in stride, like you said, on a corner route. And they gain 40 yards, and then the flag's laying on the field. Now, that is so demoralizing in the NFL, Kevin. That's when you stop a team and force them to punt. I mean, they get a big play, and they don't realize there's a penalty flag, and you move them back 10 yards. It's a double whammy. On the next play, he threw a 35-yard pass like it's no big deal.
Right, yeah.
He just erased it. That was as good as it gets.
Buddy,
he's on fire right now. Iowa State fans may have known what they had when they had that winning run with him there. But you wonder why Iowa State was so good during that stretch when he was there.
He's got
incredible.
Everything,
man. The Niners are the real deal. The Niners are the best team in football. The Eagles are kind of post-Super Bowl year fighting like crazy.
Yeah.
They got so much integrity, but their quarterback's getting hit like crazy.
Yeah.
They're barely getting it done week after week. Let's credit them. It's the NFL. They're finding a way to win. The Eagles will be a factor, but the best team in the NFL – that the Chiefs, when they look around, is the Niners.
Yep.
The Niners are great, and the Chiefs need to get to great. But in the AFC, who are you scared of? Do you think Miami's going to keep playing at this level every week? No, complete inconsistency. Buffalo, complete inconsistency. Baltimore, complete inconsistency. You do not have New England and Pittsburgh at the top of the AFC, so it's just the Chiefs. The Chiefs are the best team in the AFC, mostly because the other teams are a roller coaster ride.
The 49ers are not going 17-0, but I can't tell you who's going to beat them at this point. It's just going to have to be an off week because they're just a machine. You mentioned the Ravens. I don't even discuss the Ravens anymore. I don't know how Lamar Jackson is still a starting quarterback. I don't get this. All the guy has done his entire career is lose games, Stan. That you look at him and you go, oh, everybody wants to love Lamar Jackson. When the game's on the line, he just turns it over always, and he did it again yesterday. How did they give him whatever they gave him, $400 million or a new contract? What on earth are they thinking in Baltimore? That guy's a loser. I'm sorry, he's a loser. He's never going to win a big game, ever.
It is such a dilemma that they bought into another 5 years of, right? They had an offense that worked for him. He was their quarterback. Where are they going to find the next quarterback? They have a good team and well-coached. So they ended up going back to him, but that was embarrassing by him. That was embarrassing. Pittsburgh's not very good, okay? They're not very good, Kevin. They fight like crazy. They got a great coach who's never had a losing record. Mike Tomlin's never had a losing record in the NFL. That's unbelievable to say. But Baltimore had the game. They had the lead. The thing I don't understand about Lamar Jackson, you can criticize him and say, oh, you run too much. You rely on that. You know what's crazy is he doesn't run. When they were behind in that game, why he didn't scramble and show some toughness and speed and ability to get a drive to go beat Pittsburgh is unbelievable. You know what he did? He stood in the pocket and thought that he was Patrick Mahomes, which you know, like you said, Kevin, that's going to end up being a disaster. He lost that game. He lost the game.
Yes, he did.
By not doing what he is most – if you're the opponent, what are you scared of, Kevin? If you're a defense playing Baltimore, the thing you're most scared of is when he scrambles. The most. And he didn't scramble the whole fourth quarter when the game was on the line. It is amazing. He's going to fail passing it in the pocket, and he doesn't even try to run. That was embarrassing.
This sounds absurd. If the Ravens had Brock Purdy instead of Lamar Jackson, they would have won that game by 3 touchdowns. But it's true.
Yeah.
It's absolutely true. All right.
It's unbelievable what Brock Purdy's doing. It's unbelievable what he's doing.
So
but we saw him do it in college.
Yeah, sure did. All right, we're going to move on to college football, brought to you by Cross Kitchens, online at crosskitchenskc.com. Family owned and operated. This is your remodeler. Countertops, flooring, or a complete remodel of a level of your house. CrossKitchensKC.com. Amini's. This is Amini's. 105th and Metcalf in Overland Park. Oh, there's some good stuff in there for Stan Weber. I'll bet he'd like a game table or something. Maybe some new leather theater seating or something to watch football in. They got it all at Amini's. 105th and Metcalf. Online at Amini's.com. And Dr. Bill Bush could be your new dentist. He's the dentist of the Chiefs. Why wouldn't he be your dentist? Give him a call and set up an appointment. Two offices, North Kansas City and Westwood, 816-471-2911 for nkcdental.com. Stan, the Missouri Tigers, you know, they just didn't finish. They got beat 22-7 in the fourth quarter, but they looked really good all day. It was one of the biggest moments certainly in a decade anyway, around Missouri football. They looked the part. I thought they were going to win this game, and they couldn't make a play on either side of the ball in the fourth quarter to win the thing. Why is that in football, and what does Missouri need to do to become the team that can make those plays to win a game like that?
Well, they're in a growth stage, and they played so well. They are good. They've been able to run the football. Brady Cook's throwing the ball to a great receiving core right now. Luther Burden's unbelievable, and they had the lead. Sometimes you just got to tip your cap and say, what an amazing performance by LSU, a team you don't necessarily believe in. They're up and down and all over the board. But when you talk about the Heisman Trophy race, how can you not have Jaden Daniels in your grouping of players? What he did, he just put the team on his back, Kevin. Did you see the running capability he had? He ran for 130 yards in the game, and he threw for 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, 15 to 21. I mean, LSU just made the plays to win. Yeah, Brady Cook threw 2 interceptions. That hurts. But the guy had the longest streak in SEC history throwing passes without interception. It's going to happen. I thought it was much more about LSU than Missouri. Missouri laid their game out on the table and said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to establish that we can get this done. Heck, they scored, 39 points in the ball game. So I just think it was LSU was desperate and made plays, and their quarterback was too good. At the end of the day, he made some unbelievable runs. So I don't look down at Missouri at all, but they have to have that mentality. Because when they're flying high, how different of a team were they, Kevin, in game 4 and 5 after they beat K-State in game 3? Did you see them just transform? They transformed themselves. There's just a belief, like, we can get this done. And the quarterback started playing at a better level. And people were introduced to Theo Weiss and said, hey, wait a second, that guy's a highly recruited guy who went to Oklahoma. He's a little bit like Luther Burden. They started doing things and having confidence, and winning begets winning. It's a big part of college football. I hope Missouri doesn't lose their momentum. They had a great stretch. How about having K-State at home? How about having a sellout at LSU against LSU at home? How about first time they've had 2 ranked teams playing each other in Columbia since 2014, Kevin? It was a big day. Missed opportunity. They'd have won. They'd really be flying high. But right now, they just need to get the concentration level and take care of business, which you got to do, Kevin. How you define this season, the K-State game was giant. Everyone knew it. Everyone was focused in on it. And Missouri gets the win with a 61-yard field goal. That vaulted them to the next level. The next way the season gets defined for Mizzou is, how do you do against Kentucky and how do you do against South Carolina? You've got to beat Kentucky and South Carolina. You do that, you know you're going to beat Vanderbilt. Suddenly, your record is gleamingly good, even if you lose to Georgia. And I'm not writing off the Tennessee and Florida games,
right,
Kevin. but right. you've got to beat Kentucky and you got to beat South Carolina. That's how you move yourself to the next level. And here it is, you know, next up, Kentucky on the road. What is Kentucky? They are well-coached, solid, but they're not in Georgia's league. We found that out, right? When they get built up, Mark Stoops is doing a great job at a basketball school. He's doing a great job, Kevin, but they're not as good as Missouri. They don't have the flair. They don't have the athletes like Luther Burden. Missouri can beat Kentucky if they play a series. I got Missouri winning it. But in this one game, can they get it done? It's on the road. This is a big game for Mizzou because you don't want to lose two in a row and then suddenly look at the rest of their schedule and it could get kind of rough. If they win this game, well, you can start saying, why not 10-2, 9-3, definitely 8-4. Big opportunity, big game to just believe in themselves, Kevin, because I thought LSU at the end just made plays and you're going, crap, what an unbelievable play by the quarterback. What an unbelievable play. And they just were slightly too good. But Missouri hopefully doesn't lose any confidence from the game.
All right. So I asked you about Justin Ross and Rashee Rice of the Chiefs and where they would be. And you mentioned Rice in 2 years, maybe. You thought he'd be the guy in 2 years. If Luther Burden were on the Chiefs roster, if they drafted him last spring and he'd been here for 6 months, would he be the Chiefs' best receiver?
I think he would be. And make sure you understood what I said about Rashee Rice. I said he'll still be here, Kevin.
Yeah,
I'm not saying you have to wait. I'm saying he's legit.
Yeah.
So hopefully I was taken correctly that I'm saying he'll be with the Chiefs for a while as a feature receiver. He could be the best player by the end of this year. All he's got to do is quit dropping it. But yeah, Luther Burden has completely grown up. Last year he played like a freshman who was in a hurry, trying to make the big play before the ball got to his hands. His stats last year weren't that great. He averaged 8.3 yards per completion, Kevin. That's all. You know, so they're throwing the ball down the line to him. But now he's the real deal. And I think his body has transformed. The weightlifting and the nutrition that he got in the offseason, Kevin, he's not a skinny, fast guy anymore. You look at his body type, he's gained some thickness. You know, he's not quite as thick as a Rashee Rice looks, but yeah, I think he is ready now to play in the NFL, and he would be in the discussion. There's no doubt that if he were around Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, I would suspect he'd be their best wide receiver right now because he's going to be one of the top receivers going in the draft when he gets a chance to go.
He is something else. I just dream of either he or Brock Bowers at Georgia in a Chiefs uniform with Patrick Mahomes because we're looking for that next big thing. One of those guys, man. One of those guys.
How about Luther Burden has another year left, Kevin?
I know.
Got to play three.
I know.
So, Mizzou fans, don't worry.
Yeah.
Don't worry. He's going to be back next year as well.
It almost seems unfair, which is great for Mizzou. All right, Kansas rolls over UCF, and here's the good news for Kansas. Jalen Daniels out again, so they decided with Bean, they're not going to throw the ball. Bean was 8 out of 12 for 91 yards in this game. They ran for 400, Stan. We saw this a little bit when UCF was in Manhattan. The Wildcats just ran up and down the field on them. This was a good little piece of scheduling for Kansas to get this after Texas because UCF's defense is not Big 12 worthy, and KU just exploited them on the ground, and I thought it was great coaching. Look, you're down to your backup quarterback. You know this team can't stop us. Just run, run, run your way to 51 points, and the Jayhawks did it. Wow, did they look good.
They really look good. Everyone knows that Devin Neal is a big-time running back, but Daniel Hyshaw is the guy that's just not tackable. You know, he got hurt last year, and that affected Kansas's team for the latter half of the season. Remember when he won all the games at the beginning of the year, and then he lost at the end, and you're saying, well, how did that happen? Well, one of the things is they didn't have Hyshaw. That is an unbelievable 1-2 punch right there. He makes every pile move forward. He needs about 3 more yards than he should every play. And that's not a cut down to Devin Neal because he's doing his work as well. Well, he averaged 12.8 yards a carry in that game. So it was old school football. Kansas has balance in their offense. They can do what they need to against you. And UCF obviously is a team that you need to run the ball against and wear them down. Two things happen. One is you keep their explosive offense on the sideline and get them out of rhythm. And they don't move side to side so well. You look at the UCF players coming out on the field, Kevin, to start the game, and they look the part. They've got guys who look the part, who run the 40 or have big enough bodies, but they don't get off the blocks and go side to side very well compared to other Big 12 teams, and that's why you can get after them. Credit the KU offensive line. They were kind of working around that offensive line the last few years, Kevin. You know, when they had some decent play, it just seemed like the offensive line would break down, get sacked. I think sacks equal punts. You couldn't run the ball reliably. Then last year, they were unbelievable. Kansas was unbelievable, but they were keeping people off balance with all the motions and shifts and misdirection and plays that they had and rely on unbelievable quarterback play. He still kind of worked around their offensive line. It was getting better. But now, that's not the case. The offensive line for KU is a strength. So if you want to come around, I talked about Trent McDuffie as a Chiefs player, getting to superstar level, kind of working his way up. This is a new statement about KU right now, that their offensive line is a strength, Kevin. It's not just those two running backs or the great play calling by the offensive coordinator at Kansas. That's not what's getting it done. The offensive line is walling people off, getting their big bodies out there. So this is something new for Kansas football. Congratulations. You have not had good offensive line play for how long, Kevin? 15 years maybe. Yeah. And right now they got two very good backs. So they can get it done with Jason Bean as a quarterback. Obviously, you wonder, is Jalen Daniels going to be available this year? I don't understand backs, but scary to me, Kevin. How is he going to be reliably out there? They're very fortunate Jason Bean came back, but big opportunity this week because Oklahoma State is playing better football. When I watched Oklahoma State play Iowa State, Kevin, 2 weeks ago, I watched that game intently, you know, double, triple study it, and I go, wait a second. Number one, I thought Matt Campbell with the gambling situation and only winning one conference game last year, I thought the momentum was running out and that this group, a lot of young players for Iowa State, that they didn't look like Iowa State. They weren't fundamentally physical and in your face and going to lay a game plan out there that made you beat them. That was not the Iowa State I was expecting after Deckers, their quarterback, wasn't allowed to play because of the betting stuff going on. When I watched the game against Oklahoma State, I said, uh-oh, that's Matt Campbell's real Iowa State. He's recruited good players. They got a good weightlifting program. This is a new crew, and OSU barely lost to them. So that game, OSU at Iowa State 2 weeks ago, I thought bolted both those teams up to, you better look at Iowa State as the Iowa State of Matt Campbell. Not Brock Purdy, okay? Not that good. But up there as a very solid middle-of-the-road or upper team, and Oklahoma State the same way. And what I saw after that, I think, is confirmation. Iowa State whipped up on TCU. They are a new team when you look at them on your schedule, Kevin.
Yep, sure do.
They're back to being a dangerous. And Oklahoma State, by the way, this was not a one-off only game against K-State. I mean, K-State can talk about what they did wrong and how they lost to OSU. I'll give you that, Kevin. There's no doubt about it. But I'm telling you, OSU is playing better football, more Mike Gundy-like football, where they win games and have a winning record every year. They're not a dominant team, but they're not easy to beat. They proved it against Iowa State, in my mind, and against K-State. So, interesting game at KU going there.
I think what you're saying here is this league is tougher than people think, that there's just no patsies anymore. Like, every week, somebody can beat you, no matter whether you're playing at home or on the road. And I'm not talking about necessarily the new teams that are in, okay? They haven't had great success, and we saw that again with UCF.
The original 10, I agree with you. The original 10
they're all so close.
Better than you think.
I was going to go back to my Luther Burden theme. If Luther Burden is in Manhattan playing for Kansas State, they're undefeated and in the top 10 right now. There's no doubt in my mind. I mean, they're like Saturday or Friday night, Will Howard, there was nobody open. Like, he's forcing passes. He threw three picks. He's forcing stuff he didn't force last year when he had guys open. And I think, you know, they're missing a big play guy, not having Deuce Vaughn to break one or Malik Knowles to get behind the secondary or a player like that is really making a difference at Kansas State this year. And Will Howard looks like he's really forcing it.
Yeah, last year, one of the things that he chose to do is look downfield and not play it safe. And I thought that was really good because in college, that's what Brock Purdy does, right? Brock Purdy on 3rd and 2 doesn't look for the guy triple covered 3 yards down the field. He's like, well, there's a dude wide open right behind there. Why don't I just throw the ball 15 yards downfield? That's the same thing that Will Howard has a mentality of. So he has had an aggressive mentality, and he has a good kinship with Sennett, his tight end. But in this game, 11 targets for Ben Sennett, only 4 catches for about 35 yards. So that's a big story in the game for Oklahoma State. I think you're right, Kevin. You know, not having Deuce Vaughn is a big deal because he was a wild card. Any card game you wanted to play, Deuce Vaughn would be the wild card to trump over what you needed. You know, he could play wide receiver. He could run a screen pass for a big play. He could run the ball right up the middle. You know, they don't have that right now. And that does create a situation where K-State, at least in this Oklahoma State game, was forcing the ball. But that's how cool football is that you talk about one situation, and I'll talk about how winning begets winning. Kevin, if K-State finds a way to beat Missouri by 1 or doesn't even play Missouri, you know, plays at Tulsa like OU did, You see how OU played against Texas? OU's played nobody. But guess what? They built up, and the team believes they're great.
They did.
And when you get these young men who don't doubt, they don't doubt at 20 years old, Kevin, man, they can launch themselves. And it's an old Bill Snyderism. You know, people used to say, why does he play teams that he can beat? I'm telling you, look at OU. Look what they did against Texas. They thought they were great because they rolled through non-con. And it sounds crazy because you and I both are K-State guys, so this sounds so crazy. But if they would have played Tulsa and not Missouri or found a way to win against Missouri, they'd probably be undefeated right now in the top 10 and booming with confidence. But, man, you slip up just a little bit, and the competition's high, and you start doubting yourself, right? And, boy, it can build up. And I think you said it well. This conference right now, they have 14 teams. The new four teams are having trouble winning, okay? Going into last week, the only win, they're 1-7 going into games last week, Kevin. I didn't check how they did this week, but they're 1-7, and the only win was BYU over Cincinnati. That didn't count. They hadn't beat. The four new had not beat the other 10. And you look at West Virginia, that's supposed to be a bad team, or Iowa State. You know, Baylor played Utah right to the end. You might not think Baylor's very good. You know, Texas Tech. There are no bad teams in the 10. They're not national championship level, probably. OU and Texas probably aren't. But after the competition level is, it's available for you to win any game, but if you mess up, you're going to lose. And this is going to be a big game for Kansas because they can win at Oklahoma State, but it won't be easy. It'll be such a well-earned victory, but they have advantages because OSU is not explosive. You think about it, Kevin, they had a pick six and still scored only 29 points.
Yeah.
So in modern football, it is really hard for Oklahoma State to hold down a team like Kansas. Kansas is scoring, Oklahoma State isn't, but yeah, the middle of the pack to the lower end of the Big 12 is very, very good if you don't talk about the other four. And I'm not downgrading them because BYU might be pretty good or UCF may be bringing it on. But right now, just to start with the original 10, those guys are really playing high-level football. And add Iowa State and Oklahoma State to that. If you're going down the schedule and seeing when you have them on your schedule, you better think more of the old-school way that they play rather than what they did in the first part of the season.
Stan, great stuff as always, buddy. Thank you so much for your time. I hope you have a fabulous week, and we look forward to catching up with you next time. There's a lot going on. We're right in the thick of it all, man. I appreciate everything you do for us.
Thanks, Kevin, and I'm flipping my calendar or putting those big X's on it. That's you count down to Spencer's wedding.
Whoa!
Not that far off. So I don't know the next time I'll talk to you, Kevin, because I'm trying not to bother you right now. So have a great wedding. If I don't talk to you before it, if I do, I'll just say it again. So, man, I'm excited for you.
It's next Tuesday we're talking.
So, oh, we're going to do it again then.
Yeah, we'll do a little preview next week. We'll preview some of the
games. We're on a little different schedule. I talked to Kevin.
It is.
We got a schedule. It's all laid out. I have it on my schedule, but it's not so rhythmic. I can't say, oh, I know when I'm going to talk to you. So thanks for reminding me. Can't wait to talk to you next Tuesday.
All right, buddy. Thank you. Take care.
Okay, thanks, right, Kevin.
Bye-bye. There's Stan Weber. He is the best in the business, folks. Once again, providing everything you need to know about all these football games. He'll be with us next week doing a preview of next week's games, because I'll record that with Stan on Tuesday, then we're headed to the wedding Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, but he'll probably be like the Thursday podcast. So we're gonna get you some podcasts up while I'm gone. We're not going to jip you. We're going to make sure you got KKHI every day, even while I'm at the wedding. I think I'm going to have Spence on one of those days. I got to get Spence on here. Maybe we'll just do a podcast with Spence to see what's going on in his world. And he's got some good sports takes, and of course, he's getting married, so we'll probably talk about that a little bit. Our final is coming right up. It's brought to you by IdealHealthKC.com. Dr. Kip Van Camp would love the opportunity to work with you if you have pain, chronic pain, joint pain, or COVID shot issues, and the regular doctors haven't worked out very well for you. They're trying to give you a pill or a shot. How about your body's own tissue working for you? Regenerative medicine could be what works for you. To schedule an appointment with Ideal Health KC, call 913-745-5300 online at idealhealthkc.com. And Advantage Termite and Pest Control, they came out and did my regular service on Saturday. And the young man that was here was so nice. I had a couple of friends over. We're just watching college football, sitting out back. And he comes by and he does it. I mean, I'm telling you, the guy must have been here 45 minutes. It was so thorough. He takes this giant pole and sponge thing and does all the soffits under the edge of my house up by the roof. He goes, yeah, some bugs can get in by the shingles and we got to take care of that. I'm like, wow. They're really thorough at what they do. He was here for quite some time, and I never see critters. But a lot of times I'm just not home, and I don't know what they do. But they're amazing. Advantage Termite and Pest Control is online at AdvantageTPC.com. Our final is the New England Patriots, who got beat 34-0 on Sunday. They're a train wreck. They're a disaster. I mean, they just got pummeled. But that isn't the final. How about this? The New England Patriots are suing Eastern Airlines for $22.8 million for basically price gouging. Couple things here. Did you know there was still an Eastern Airlines? Because I did not. And apparently they only have jumbo jets. They have like 757s and 767s. And apparently one of them is painted with Patriots logos and stuff on it. And all this stuff about Robert Kraft owning his own airplane for the Patriots all these years, apparently it's not true. If it's true, why are they chartering and leasing from Eastern Airlines? Anyway, they're suing them over price gouging about the Patriots airplane, which is very surprising to me. I can't tell you where Eastern Airlines flies. All I know is that they're jumbo jets. They've been in bankruptcy a couple of times, and they go way, way back. Eastern does. This is the new Eastern Airlines, so it's not the same company, but I didn't know they were in business, and now they're fending off a lot. Things are so bad in New England that Robert Kraft is now reduced to suing something called Eastern Airlines, which apparently they chartered their planes from. The Chiefs and Royals, I think, both use United. I think United is like the biggest charter carrier for sports teams in America. And I think that's the direction they go. We've all heard of United. I didn't know Eastern was still around. There's your final on this Football Feast Monday at Kevin Keatsman Has Issues.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC. To get exclusive patrons-only podcasts, receive a weekly newsletter, and attend in-person patrons-only parties, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron today. This has been a production of Crooked Tail Media Incorporated.